Did I offend you? Sorry. You are the bastard, though.
All right, let's do this.
Got my printed out chapter right in front of me.
Dragons and White Walkers. Which one will you choose?
Question mark?
Question mark? You don't have to choose between either right now anymore, everyone, because HBO has officially ordered another pilot to add to the list of one pilot that was from the list of available pilots from available material from A Song of Ice and Fire. Now that Game of Thrones is over, HBO has officially ordered are we calling it a Targaryen prequel?
Basically, I think so. That's the what
adaptation
the article calls
of Fire
it.
And Blood for HBO. Is that what we're all hoping that that's what it is?
I'm excited about this one. I'm more excited about a Targaryen prequel than White Walkers because I feel like I still have some post season 8 depression, RE, how the White Walkers were resolved.
You think you're afraid that it'll be handled similarly, or you're just a little bit, you're like, I don't care because you didn't earn my respect in that moment, so I'm not going to be looking forward to you.
Yeah, it's like a punishment.
I would take the Arya stuff, though, you know? It opens up a whole conversation for me. I'm excited by all this, and I don't want to jump right into being a downer right off the bat because this is exciting, and I have all of these images in my mind of the soaring capabilities with money and time and, like I said, all of the direct references and subject material from Fire and Blood. So we have something to base it off of, so we don't really have any weird story-based excuses. We don't lack for imagery, so we know it could be cool. But I find myself always hoping for, and this was kind of the same thing with Fantastic Beasts, like it's cool, and I love the idea of visiting a character that I'm obsessed with, Albus Dumbledore, his backstory and learning more about his life and the doing it in the context of all of the people that would be around at that same time in the Wizarding World was a really a cool device, a way to get me interested about something that I am sort of against, which is getting super excited about old stuff. I didn't know that I felt that way, but now that it's gone through a couple of my favorite things, now with A Song of Ice and Fire and the adaptations with HBO, like I said, I like the idea of going back into all that detail, but I'm really always looking forward to pushing the story into new boundaries. And I think that we're all capable. We're all grown-ups. At least we're supposed to be when we're watching Game of Thrones, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's like we can handle this, but it seems like safe business as usual is the name of the game. I'm not mad.
I think
but.
So. I'm cautiously optimistic and a little bit more excited, like I said, about this specific pilot that's been put to order than the other one, because I feel like while you're right, it's kind of dabbling in the past. I feel like so many of the events covered in Fire and Blood and what this is likely going to go into are far enough away and we haven't spent a lot of time in these events outside of some of these extra source materials. And so I think that it'll give us a cool opportunity to play in a familiar space without rewriting canon, like Fantastic Beasts 1 versus Fantastic Beasts 2. That's kind of the hope that I have.
But yeah, so it's going to lack that sort of controversial spin on things, is what you're saying.
Because it's not going to, well, what I hope is that it's not going to try to rewrite the rules of the game or change canon or mess with anything. It plays in a familiar space with
for some, though,
interesting
because
new take.
A Song of Ice and Fire is so vast, and I think that there are fans that even balk at the size of Fire and Blood when they question themselves, what's the trajectory of the story here? Have I seen the end
for
of
sure.
it already in the end of Game of Thrones? Will I read basically the same ending at the end of Song of Ice and Fire? Is that what we're all leading to?
Yeah.
But it was the same story for Game of Thrones, the TV series, throughout the life of the show because the books were outpacing it up until a point, and it was still massively successful, wildly popular, and that was not something that people complained about. I mean, people could have found spoilers, and let's say if Fire and Blood is copied to a T, they'll always be able to find spoilers. We have the ultimate spoiler, like I said, but as far as getting the story played out in a way that's fun and giving people, artists, new people, fresh blood, the opportunity to express within Westeros, that's pretty cool. Especially in a different period where it seems like the budget of the people that were involved, of all the nobles, was much higher, and I guess it's always just grass is greener, but if I feel like they have such cooler looking stuff and they speak in such more epic terms, and I think it would be rife for a lot of really cool television because of that.
And a lot of great blonde wigs.
Blonde wigs, a lot of strategically placed CGI if they have the budget for it. I think it has the potential to outsell all of us on the spectacle of prestige TV if they choose to do it. They could make Game of Thrones look silly. They could actually do a good job on it. I'm thinking about the last season, but they could actually, you know what I mean, like do the math and be like, all right, well, let's take a new concerted approach to this and make something that isn't just checking the boxes, but is something that is pushing the boundaries like we've seen them do before at HBO with the series, with the characters, and make us think that old stuff is cool again.
Or the stakes are lower, so we'll enjoy it more because the stakes are lower.
Right.
But also, I mean, This is all just speculation because this is all just, there's a chance that this doesn't even come to fruition. So I think that this is all just, because I would be surprised if multiple of these made it to air, right?
Wouldn't that be exciting, though?
Shouldn't be.
Well, when pilots are ordered, it doesn't mean that the show is going to see the live day. It means that we might not ever see it, or it'll probably be offered in a special featurette down the line, depending on which one was chosen. But if they were both chosen, I mean, that would be a pretty cool release schedule. We could have like a summer series and a winter series. Why wouldn't they do it? The HBO Now subscriptions would tick up again. There'd be a reason to subscribe year round.
That the could hype 24/7. Awesome. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Would you be down for that? It'd be like having football season all year.
Oh, I'd be totally down for
it. That'd be so exciting. Totally. My life would have so much more meaning.
I'm totally here for it. I just am trying not to get too excited about any one particular thing yet, just because we are so early on in that process.
This could be the strategy of just dividing and conquering. We have the money to do it. We have to compete with Netflix, with Amazon. Why don't we put all of our soldiers out there and see what comes of it? And may the best pilot win, like the best depiction, the best evolution of what we think is cool to see in Westeros.
To be pessimistic, I think they can get this less wrong than they can with Long Night stuff. So I feel like there's more creative liberties that they can take this route that don't hurt my feelings and mess with theories and things like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. From my personal opinion.
With the Long Night, there could be so much illusion yet to be found, hinted at even more if George had a heavy hand in it. That would be a shame. It would be worse than Cursed Child if they were playing around in the sandbox of not only the Genesis, the White Walkers, but just the period of time in general that led to where we are in current day events, and that be not really canonical. I mean, sort of approved, but not by the hand or mouth. That would be a disappointment. Unless
that's
it was
what
awesome.
I'm saying.
What if it was really awesome? We're like, hell yeah, they can carry the torch after George isn't with us no longer. He will be frozen and brought back one day, so don't fear. If it's not finished, it will be finished.
I just feel like they had so much opportunity in the latter seasons to do that kind of thing, and they didn't. And maybe they'll come back and try to make up for it, but I just feel like the show has never done a good job with any of this backstory or lore. So why go back and mess with it when you could do something different? But obviously I'm going to be excited either way. And who knows if another thing gets added to the mix or what these even turn into. And I'm going to be excited whatever that first trailer is that drops. It's going to be a great day.
Yeah, that's true. This will be cool. We'll keep our eyes and ears peeled, everyone. I mean, when news for the series comes out, I feel like it's a sort of standard practice now for all major news outlets, even that the series is over, to cover the spectacle that is A Song of Ice and Fire and Game of Thrones. So that is the world we're living in. So you will hear about it first before it's on the podcast, probably. But I'm really curious.
Yeah, guaranteed.
Well, maybe not, depending on what you're doing. You could be living in Alaska and just downloading all your podcasts at once and ignoring the news. That would be a cool thing to do. Either way.
That's ideal.
We are doing the Winds of Winter sample chapters this summer. And there's been a really cool just sort of effect of the way that we chose to put them together. After starting with Dion, moving chronologically through the order that George has released them upon the public, we've spent some time in Marine, specifically in this epic moment of the Battle of Fire. And today we're talking about two Tyrion chapters. One is an account from more fan summaries, but we have fan summaries from more than one convention.
Fan.
Which is, that's more than one reading. Yeah, you're right. More than one fan, more than one reading, more than one convention. So the cross-referencing shows the holes that might come from the opinion of those that are hearing those chapters be read out loud. You can judge from when we read those later and choose on what you want to believe, but they kind of paint the same image. But luckily we have the actual copy of Tyrion chapter 2, which was read also at a convention and then later marketed on the World of Ice and Fire
the off brand.
So that gives you like context on how you could feel about the first chapter, but holy crap.
I feel like you were loving these chapters the whole time you're reading them, just getting a steady stream of text saying this chapter or these chapters rule.
Yeah, man.
Which I feel the same way. I feel the same way about this as you do. And I feel like it's interesting because we are talking about the same situation that we talked about last time with this battle outside of Marine, and it feels so much more exciting and interesting when it's from Tyrion's perspective than it is from Barristan's perspective.
God, what a...
I know.
It's nice to learn some truths about yourself, though, in the heat of battle. I don't know where to begin when it comes to talking about this. Analysis-wise, I have... just pages of quotes that I pulled because I thought it was that good. There's so many memorable passages in this chapter for myriad reason. But just comparing it to that, the Selmy chapter, that's an interesting take. I hadn't thought of it that way, of which one I prefer in the moment. George grabs us, or at least grabs me. And it sounds like it worked on you too, so that's awesome.
Oh, totally, 100%. I'm so much more invested, obviously, for obvious reasons, into Tyrion's journey to even get to this point and everywhere that he's been in order to reach Daenerys, and this whole plotting with Brown Ben Plum and being on the wrong side of the battle and the chaos that we were talking about in the last chapter continues to build and build throughout both of these chapters, and everything is turning up well for Tyrion, which is also exciting because it feels like it's got to fall. And so, and Tyrion in battle, he's talking about Blackwater and he's talking about Shay. I mean, you can't help but feel this nostalgic love for those moments.
Yeah, it definitely puts you to, I was thinking about what relief I felt, and I was wondering if it was because it'd been so long since I had analyzed a chapter of Tyrion for the podcast or read Tyrion in a way that didn't make it feel like he was like on his way somewhere. I don't know if that makes any sense, but Tyrion and Essos felt different to me. Mm-hmm. But on a reread, that difference was lessened. And then now, while reading this, I'm reminded much of the same sort of references that he would have inside of his mind when he was in a place like King's Landing. So I guess he's just a little bit more sober is what it is. And he's sober in a lot of ways. Like think about the slog that was the Myrnese nobles and being a slave among the people who were catching the Pale Mare and working his way out of that captivity into the camp of the Second Sons. What kind of just slog of a hellhole that was. That was like the peak of the confusion and the weirdness of Tyrion's Essosian adventure before he breaks out of this chasm and is hopefully moving steadily toward meeting with Daenerys. We still don't know yet, but obviously it seems like it's going to go that way. And for it to happen in this way was really satisfying. And like I said, we didn't get the Tyrion one chapter, but it looks to be centered around a game of Syvas with Brown Ben Plum, which is a nice, imagine it in the context of the Winds of Winter. It's probably somewhere around this Barristan set of chapters, Barristan 1, Barristan 2. I'm imagining the context of the bodies flying through the sky and the opening chapter or the opening passages on, I think, Tyrion 2 and Barristan 2 are quite similar. There's just a really cool vortex happening. And I think that the texture that George is writing with this book, The Winds of Winter, it's so bright here at the beginning of the book. And I felt like it was going to be a drag, like a total, like sort of the reminiscent of how it feels when Stannis is heading toward Winterfell. I mm-hmm. thought that that would be the overall vibe of T-Wow, but we have got this, I think, remember that picture I sent you of a Meereen with the trebuchets around it and the Skahazadon?
Yes.
And yeah. It's just hilarious what's going down right now when you really think about it. You've got Vic Greyjoy, yeah, just in the water. He's got, they sent ships that are on fire that are blocking the mouth of the river. So they're pretty well good out there. They're taking care of people handily. They're also landing some of their men on the shore because they've got the water taken care of. What a bloody disaster when it was just that that slog I was talking about that Tyrion was just in. Now this is happening. What a change, and what a bright just burst of energy at the beginning of The Winds of Winter. So cool.
Chaos is the ladder. You know what they say.
Yeah, you've got Littlefinger looking through his glass candle, watching the Battle of Meereen right now, wondering how it's going to go. What was that passage in the chapter where Tyrion was referring to Pudding Face, Gorzak? And he was talking about how the Meereenese, or no, the Yunkai nobles are playing, basically playing chess, playing Sybass with all these people, and that they're down in the middle of it playing as the pieces. And just thinking about mm-hmm. Illyrio in that moment and how his plan and like all these different points, these little nodes of his plan that have made their way. We've got the Greyjoys, or a Greyjoy with a Dragonbinder horn, in Slaver's Bay right now, literally fighting. Barristan, although he wasn't directly in charge of that happening, I feel like Lord Grandfather being a part of all the stuff out east could have been changed, could have been influenced in some way, but it's happened. Barristan, Tyrion's there. I mean, he was a direct plant, plus the warring factions that are contending for not even this battle necessarily, but basically for the fate of Pentos that hangs in the balance after this is done. It's just like we're not even halfway through the events that Illyrio has planned and that Varys has had a hand in and that Tyrion has been privy to and that Young Griff and everyone's carrying out. And it's just like, it could be the end for Tyrion right now, but it's just like we're not even through stuff right now. We're barely in it.
I mean, it's very much cliche, and we say it all the time, but things are converging in such a real way and starting to get messy with all of these different major players that haven't necessarily interacted before. And I know that Tyrion and Barristan have spent some time together, and so that's not necessarily a new thing, but you think about the Greyjoys and everything that they're bringing to the table here, and you think about all these different groups of sellswords, and you think about we're in this strange different land that we don't quite want to be in / understand.
This body's flying through the sky.
Yeah, I think that the confusion is so interesting, and I really liked through this second chapter how I really felt like there was not only confusion in Tyrion's mind as he's kind of sorting through his memories and going in and out of these different people who he spent time with, but there's also all these different conversations weaving in through the same thing about who's in charge and who are supposed to be listening to who, and dragons are flying around and the sun is rising and it's in everybody's eyes, and the Ironborn, they've got Targaryen banners and there's horns on all different sides, and these trebuchets that are being so focused on, and whose side are we supposed to be on, and these men that are scared to go into battle, and Tyrion, these men that aren't scared to go into battle. I don't know, there's so many different conflicting things that are all being weaved.
It's like everything he's sort of learned almost just being shown in mm-hmm. front of him again, and he's just like calmly making only a few decisions really in the whole chapter, right? Just kind of like, it's so crazy how he's just kind of like leaning around. And I guess Jorah is really working with the same stuff. They've both been through so much, even though these are the top guys in Essos, and they've been around, you know what I mean? They've been around the block a time or two. So they're like already, when when Brown Ben, even though he's surrounded by people that he works with, is considering decisions within that tent later when they're visited by the messenger, the young guy messenger, he glances to Tyrion before he like makes a decision. Just like a sort of respect of, I mean, how could he not? He's the guy he's been playing Syvas with all this time, who he had just had that conversation about moving over to Daenerys' side in the wake of all these changes. It's just
it was the plan all along.
Yeah, it was the plan all along, right?
Yeah, supposedly. So I just feel like, I mean, Tyrion, he's got it in the bag.
Yeah, right, the now scale is so crazy because he's had it not in the bag before, but he's been in the middle of disastrous circumstances. Like you said, we had a lot of references back to Blackwater. He also talks about the Green Fork, which is his first fight. And we are given these, the sort of proof about his humanity, which isn't anything that I really needed, but I liked getting it. It was some of the more personal and powerful parts of this chapter. It was unexpected. There was so many different layers. George was telling us about the war, and he was telling us about the people, like you said, and he was telling us about what might happen when all these forces clash in with one another. But inside of the person, Tyrion, it was a kind of a readout, as if he had been processing his feelings throughout this Eastern journey and becoming, you know, like honest with himself and learning the truth about specifically how he felt. And Penny was a cool device in that moment to cut across his trust with himself, with his behavior and his relationship with women. And it was just like a really cool window. I heavily suggest everyone read this. If you're listening to the podcast, we're just going to be saying stuff. Like, it's like word vomit. It's just quote. This chapter was quote after quote of info dump that I felt like George had kind of been saving throughout his time. Imagine writing Tyrion all those years and then not publishing a chapter like this for so long. And so that's what this was.
We're not even close though to what the kind of thing we're going to see in
that's
Winds of Winter.
That's what's so crazy about
this.
It. Because I like that illusion where there was in this chapter, and there's so many illusions and moments that you could go through here with the fine tooth comb and relate to other like events in either the series that are yet to come or stuff that has happened. But Penny said something that was pretty illuminating, talking about how he should lead the Young Kai. Like when he was getting his armor donned and he was sort of like processing the information, his thoughts out loud about which sides were going to go where. And I was like, well, that made me think immediately of Tyrion with the Hand of the Kingpin, or sorry, the Hand of the Queen pin standing beside Daenerys in King's Landing, obviously depicted in the TV show, but the scale could be
right
there.
Right. It gives you hope for all of these, the weight of all these moments and how they're going to play out.
I also had
I was going to say, as you're talking about Tyrion's journey and just like the humanity of this whole chapter, there's this one piece very early on in the chapter that I wanted to read that I thought kind of sums all of that up pretty nicely. And it says, he had traveled across half the world by way of palanquin, pole boat, and pig, sailed in slave ships and trading galleys, mounted whores and horses all the time, telling himself that he did not care whether he lived or he died, only to find out that he cared quite a lot after all. Which is quite the realization to come at this point when he very well could die in a battle like this. I mean, the fact that he's survived in the last two that he has participated in have been nothing short of a miracle. And here he is finally coming face to face with something that he has been hoping for and dreaming of ever since he left King's Landing, which is just to no longer be on this earth. And he realizes he doesn't want it anymore. I mean, he cares about his life. And thinking about that line in the context of just everything that's kind of shuffling through his head, whether it's out loud or just his own thoughts, I felt like it's a really, what word do I want to use? I don't know. It's like picturesque is almost the thing that I'm thinking of.
It's just perfect. It's like the right thing. He wrote the right thing in that moment.
George R. R. Martin is a good writer.
He's
what can he
nailing
say?
It with Tyrion, though. I mean, it feels like a whole other thing right now. Like, the Barristan stuff was good. Don't get me wrong. I felt like the age of Barristan, especially in comparison to these two chapters, I'm like, okay, Barristan's older and he's sort of like given up on a lot of things that Tyrion is working out right now that he's going to have to give up on. And so he's already leaning into the epicness of the moment, whereas Tyrion's got this anger, just this refusal to submit to the will of the world. Like that moment when he was clenching his fist with Penny and he was thinking about how he had sort of now personified the same idea of Shay to him in a way, in this dangerous moment in this tent with someone that he originally didn't care about, that now he just wants to have a decent, perhaps ending to her life, not even a long life. The stranger had mounted his pale mare and was riding toward them with his sword in hand, but Tyrion Lannister did not care to meet with him again. Not now, not yet, not this day. What a fraud you are, imp. You let 100 guardsmen rape your wife, shot your father through the belly with a quarrel, twisted a golden chain around your lover's throat until her face turned black, yet somehow you still think that you deserve to live.
Powerful.
I'm going to read another quote that Hannah doesn't want to read with me. He sighed. I would sell my sister. This is later. This is good. Penny was on her game. And I feel like, and George depicted this well, I think, in these moments where you know that you're about to die, you don't have a lot of time for BS. So you're saying probably your best material. Like your body is sort of spitting it out automatically, and she landed a good joke here. He sighed. I would sell my sister for a cup of wine. She says, you would sell your sister for a cup of horse piss. That was so unexpected that it made him laugh aloud. Aha. Is my taste for horse piss so well known, or have you met my sister?
How often does Tyrion LOL?
Not often.
He's not just very like often.
Thinking.
Can we go back to the other quote that you read, though, about the stranger? It just, to me, as I'm thinking about Barristan and like the differences as they're going into this battle, reminded me of him riding on top of that pale mare himself, and how we were kind of talking about him. Were we talking about him, or was I thinking after about him? And just the idea of the representation of death and how...
Oh, no.
Did we talk about that?
Well, we talked about... And are you asking in the Selmy chapter, did we talk about how he prayed to the stranger? And I think that was confusing, or you thought it was something of interest?
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking of. And just this idea of like,
why would he pray to the stranger in that way? He was like asking the stranger to spare him by chance.
Right.
He had covered right. his bases, and he was like, by the way, magic, if magic is real, magic me some magic today.
I just felt like the way that Tyrion describes the stranger here is reminiscent of kind of the way that Barristan is described in the chapters, and how like he was dealing with the stranger, like the stranger just kind of coming up a lot. And I don't know what any of that means, but I just, that was something that kind of caught my eye a little bit.
I think that there's something to that. It's like this, it's not parallel thinking, but there's this just sort of evocative details, kind of like the blood on the white dragon and the veiny blood on the white dragon, that George and I think other authors just do to make us, just to trigger a thought, but to not necessarily spell it out. So in this moment, if you're right, then we've got these veins connecting Barristan to this thought. And in this thought, the stranger's on the pale mare and riding with a sword, and it looks like he's bringing death. But Tyrion doesn't want to meet death, not now, not today. So he doesn't want to run into Barristan in the battlefield, because Barristan will kill him, or Barristan
sure.
is going to die on his own, and that the stranger's not going to work well for Barristan.
This week's episode is brought to you by Quip.
The best way to ease back into a post-summer routine? Simplify the morning and evenings with an electric toothbrush from Quip.
Timed sonic vibrations offer an effective clean that's gentle on your sensitive gums in just 2 minutes twice a day. And the multi-use cover works as a stand and mounts to mirrors, putting brushing front and center in your bathroom. Better yet, the lightweight, compact design means you can bring it along with you on those last summer weekend getaways.
And brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, making it easy to stay committed to your oral health. That's been one of the biggest struggles for me, originally using a different electric toothbrush. there's no directions. It might be obvious to some people, but it wasn't obvious to me that I needed to replace the brush heads on a frequent basis. But Quip builds that into their product, which I think is very convenient. And their brush heads are significantly cheaper than other electric toothbrushes I've found, and especially the one that I used before. So that is a big benefit.
And honestly, they're much swaggier. Can I say that?
It's just one of those, it's kind of trendy. You know what I mean? Like, you were just talking before we recorded this about your friend's Quip, and the way you said it, it just kind of sounded like it was replacing the idea of a toothbrush in some way. And I was like, is this like the Away suitcase of toothbrushes? Is this what's happening?
Honestly, they go hand in hand. Honestly, so.
I don't know if we can mention another brand in the same ad, but no. it's cool. All right. It's like they're not competing against each other. And I feel like, you know, it's all in the same, like you said, the same vibe, right?
100%.
That's why I love Quip and why it's perfect for getting back into a routine. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/gameofowns right now, you can get your first refill pack for free.
That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/gameofowns. It's all very ominous. I think that we're at the cusp of, as we've been saying, chaos. And whoever's favored, the tide turns to, great on them. And I think we can make some assumptions on what that will look like. But
Barristan is showing respect toward his sellsword friends in the wake of battle. And, or not necessarily in the wake, in the heat of it. And he's, I don't know, I feel like, made a lot of concessions now that he's been out east. He's a bit more exotic of a man. He's less set in his ways, well traveled, a little bit more progressive. Like, he's seen a lot of stuff. He's like, all right, they do that out here. Okay. What is a brazen beast? You guys have different outfits for different meanings. Okay. Got it. Okay. Maybe when he comes in contact with our friends, if things go well for them, maybe the stranger will roll the dice in our favor. And they'll become friends because he's learned more things.
Right. Well, I think that so much kind of hinges on when and where and how bad Tyrion looks in that specific moment, because this could vary. I mean, he's caught in between. He's in the thick of it. Like, the chances of him putting himself in a position that's going to put him favorably, I feel like, seems slim at this point and from this vantage point. And so whether he runs into Barristan on the battlefield or whether they meet after, once Tyrion has said something to Daenerys to make her believe that he can be a trustworthy kind of guy, whether Tyrion and Barristan never actually meet because Barristan doesn't make out alive, which I think is potentially a possibility in this battle. I think that there, a lot of that kind of thing is up in the air. And I think that we didn't really get to see, I felt like in the TV show, we never really had an opportunity to explore what Tyrion coming into Daenerys' life truly meant. And kind of, there was no real sense of, not punishment, but almost. I don't think he's just going to waltz it up scot-free necessarily.
Right.
Especially if he's in the thick of battle. I mean, so
Jorah was the one that took all of it, man. Like, Jorah was passing, yeah. Or Tyrion was passing judgment on Jorah too.
Right. So weird. I'm really excited to see how that will eventually play out. Another thing I'm extremely excited about what's going to come next in these chapters is when all of these different horns start blowing, and one of them potentially being a dragon binder, and what that's going to do for the whole vibe. It's so exciting to me.
God, things are crazy right now. I loved the depiction of the conflict in Meereen in the TV show, but there's some big differences here. Daenerys is nowhere to be found. She's with the Dothraki that are out far away from us. Maybe they've spent some time writing. That would be an interesting development to all this. But I kind of like the idea of this being its own thing and turning into what it will. And sort of like after the fight at Isengard. And you haven't read Lord of the Rings, damn it. So this is just everyone that's listening, all right? Hannah, you just take a break right now. So
cool.
After the Ents destroy Isengard, our friends visit the hobbits sitting upon the victories and eating salted pork. It's like, what are we going to do about this? I like the idea of Daenerys returning in some victorious fashion and seeing what they like came up with. Like, well, this is the best of what we had to come up with. And I think Brown Ben is seeing that potential future when he's glancing at Tyrion and then ultimately going, Jorah, what do you think? It's like he could have talked to anyone in that tent, but he knew where things were headed, or at least feels where things could be headed. And with the wind blown turning, whether or not the Tattered Prince gets Pentos like he was promised, right now there's so much complication because there's so many different people. I mean, there's like 30 youngish nobles that are here with all their money and all their people and all their strange outfits that are playing at war as it is. A few of them are serious. Most of them aren't very intelligent at all. See, that's the thing here. And we can use Tyrion and Jorah as part of our guide. Brown Ben we've spent some time with, but he's a dubious kind of guy. So let's just not waste time with that. Just look at how easy Tyrion and Jorah are navigating through this. There's not a lot of smart people here. They haven't had a lot of time like practicing what they're doing out for real. And they live in Slaver's Bay. These are crazy people, all right? They're doing wild shit. And George is doing a good job of like telling us and showing us those differences. And the flavor of Victarion Greyjoy, bringing that sort of wild mentality. It's Westerosi, but it's a different breed of Westerosi into the middle of it. And then you've got Barristan. That's like this moral compass among all of it. He will do no wrong. But now that Dany's gone, no one is there to be in charge of them. So anything could happen. Very fascinating.
Don't you think, though, that the ease with which Jorah and Tyrion glide through all of this should give you pause instead of being like, what's up? All these people aren't very smart.
I don't know yet, because while he has been gliding, you say, Tyrion was really... like it was tough, and it was tough for Jorah too. Like they weren't gliding, and the same for Barry with the attempted coup, and with just bodies raining on the city, and everyone thinking that they're going to catch the disease, whether they do or not. It's pretty terrible, you know. Like what they're going through
for sure,
is
but
really
it,
hard.
But it took Tyrion a couple games of Syvass to convince Brian Ben Plum to completely flip in the middle of battle.
But that's the thing. It's not only the side vast, it's also the long game that's being played with the Greyjoys. Just the way that those chips were falling. Like if Vic wasn't there with his people, there's no way the Yunkai would lose. This is just this strange, we don't even know about the people that are across the river still that mm-hmm. we don't know if they're going to make their way. So still it's going to be tough. This isn't like a complete victory, but dragons flying in the sky, causing confusion, actually taking out people, eating. There's a great passage where Viserion, they're all looking at Rhaegal and like, oh, it's what a crazy green dragon. And then it's like, well, wait, but look at this white dragon. And imagine that for a second, just in case you forgot, like, holy crap. Imagine this white dragon. He's flying, he scoops, bites these dead bodies flying out of midair. And of course, his intestines are much shorter. He's a straight carnivore. He's not going to catch this sickness. He will be fine. I mean, that's crazy. Imagine the Dragonbinder capturing one of those guys. It just mixes it up even more. That's terrible.
It's so wild.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. That's why I'm not ready to make any decisions yet, because while it seems that we're going to just be dividing the spoils among people that are on Dany's side, I don't know if it's going to be that easy, and we're only a few chapters into it. But this has turned out to be my favorite fight so far, just because of the kind of individuals. We haven't even ran into Dario yet. I wonder what he's going to be like on the battlefield.
I feel like I'm even more excited for once the fight is over and some of those different conversations that are going to start happening. And what those look like with who's left over.
I wonder how long they'll be there before Dany arrives back. Or what that even looks like. Don't forget that there's Carthene ships in the bay as well. So it's like everyone is pretty much involved right now. Like this is a pretty big thing to figure out.
Right. I feel like she can't be gone for much longer. The momentum is too momentous for her to be absent from all of this for much longer.
So Tyrion is like, I guess it'll be the span of the book. So let's just say a handful of chapters away from being in dust and blood to being cloaked, robed, and made official, making big decisions with money and power and people.
Let's hope so.
Do you really hope so, though?
Yeah.
You think he's in the right position or the right guy for it, even with the like the rage that he had? It seemed like he was about to take out Penny.
I mean, Tyrion is his own flawed self, but it's like we're saying at the beginning of this episode, seeing everything from his perspective is something that just feels so A Song of Ice and Fire, in the dumbest way to put it. I love Tyrion chapters. I love Tyrion. I love his journey. I love this idea of us having the opportunity to read through. Just thinking about, and this is like a very roundabout thought, so bear with me for 5 seconds. I keep thinking a lot about, in this chapter, the way he's thinking about all of the women in his life and how he's like kind of jumbling them all up, and all these different memories are all getting convoluted and swirling around in his head, and how he's dealing continually with everything that happened with Shay and everything that he went through to get over here and blah, blah, blah. All the stuff we've been talking about for years and years, him bringing all of that and him thinking through all of that, but also standing next to Daenerys as they make these major decisions to finally get out of Meereen and to actually make moves is something that is so dang exciting to me. And something that, as you know, as I think about Winds of Winter and struggling through all these different things, there's moments that I am really hyped for. And I feel like, as we've been reading the Winds of Winter sample chapter, that this is the most excited that I feel like I've been able to get again for Winds of Winter, is reading these chapters. For my own personal investment. So
it's almost like that's what excited. They were supposed to do.
Yeah, crazy, right?
I wonder if that Tyrion chapter is lit up, or if it's just like a sort of last ditch, like sort of nod to the Eastern style chapters that he had with young Griff, you know, on the river.
That's kind of the vibe I was thinking. I mean, I know we only have a couple sentences and a couple paragraphs, but to me, it just reads as...
Should we read those? We said we were. Forgot. They're kind of short.
They're just some rando wrote that, though, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Although, the one thing, there is a point in one of these summaries where they talk about how the mood is pretty tense. And so, I think that there's a lot of interesting but there's probably a lot of interesting conversation about what Tyrion says to get Brown Ben Plum to want to switch sides, and specifically, like, what are the specific things, and why is he so confident in what he's trying to sell, and why does it work? I think will be a lot of interesting quips back and forth,
at the very least, to probably more of his story down the line.
Yeah.
Well, it's led to the kind of revelations that he's had in this chapter, though. So I'm curious if I'm actually going to learn anything from it, or if it was just going to lead me to this point. You know, I'm sure that it has its own unique stuff, but.
It's just weird to have it's weird to have not that chapter, but the chapter after.
It's so strange. Honestly, all of this is weird. Just having sample chapters in general is strange. I'd love to, I like this. This is really interesting. And that's sort of been my relationship with The Song of Ice and Fire the whole time, with the TV show and all that. It's just been kind of wonky and all over the place, but it's unique, and I hope that you're all enjoying the experience as much as I am, because I don't know if we're going to get an opportunity that's this kind of unique again in our lives. So that's cool. And there's plenty of other great authors that are, you know, doing their best work and then putting it out. You get to see all the chapters perfectly laid out with the right typeface, and you get to look at it and go, I can't wait to see what this is like once I get all the way through it. Maybe you shouldn't look at the last chapter names. Good thing George doesn't put us in that position, because all he's doing is titling the POVs. But again, some of those can be revealing or confusing.
True.
It's a hard life out here when you're reading books for enjoyment, but you know, that's what we have in this world. We don't only have to learn and survive. We have this really cool stuff that allows us to question what the author might be meaning in this, because he wants to tell us something, I guess, through the pages, or maybe it's what he personally believes. Maybe it's not what he personally believes. And we'll find out.
Or maybe he doesn't know what he's doing, but that's okay too.
There's that too.
Down for any of the options.
Are there any standout moments from the chapter, like other than Owens, that you would like to mention? There was a few that I had that aren't Owens, but I just would be remiss if we didn't talk about them because we might not say them again out loud unless in passing for a while until that book comes out.
Go for it.
Okay.
Podrick Payne. That's a little shout out we need to give.
Shout out to Podrick Payne. After days hidden inside musty tents of the Second Sons, the outside air smelled fresh and clear. I felt this. Though he could not see the boy from where he stood, the ting of salt told him it was near, or the bay, sorry. Tyrion filled his lungs with it. A fine day for a battle. From the east, the sound of drumming rolled across the parched plain. A column of mounted men flashed past the Harridan, flying the blue banners of the wind blown. It was time to find his own horse, he knew. Time to don some dead boy's armor, buckle on a sword and dagger, slip his din and gray helm over his head. Dawn had broken, and a sliver of the rising sun was visible behind the city's walls and towers, blindingly bright. To the west, the stars were fading one by one, trumpets blowing along the Skahazadon, war horns answering from the walls of Meereen. A ship was sinking in the river mouth of fire. Dead men and dragons were moving through the sky. Whilst warships crashed and clashed on Slaver's Bay, Tyrion could not see them from here, but he could hear the sounds, the crash of hull against hull as ships slammed together, the deep-throated war horns of the ironborn and queer high whistles of Karth, the splintering of oars, the shouts and battle cries, the crash of axe on armor, sword, and shield, all mingled with the shrieks of wounded men. Many of the ships were still far out in the bay, so the sounds they made seemed faint and far away, but he knew them all the same, the music of slaughter. I just keep going.
Yeah, I'm just enjoying this.
I hear you like ruffling the pages. You printed out this chapter.
Sorry,
how many was it? You said how many pages?
I printed out the chapter. Everybody, it be like that sometimes. It's like I was looking through what I want to set, what my favorite parts are. I was like looking for my own while you were doing that, shuffling my chapter, my paper. So I don't know why I printed it out. I did.
What was the typeface size? I'm curious how long it is because I've only read it in PDF format.
It's like 8 pages. I printed it out because I tried to copy the PDF into a Google Doc so I could like type on it and make notes, and I couldn't get it to work. And I was so annoyed. It'd so I just like printed it. Yeah. So anyway, sorry.
Here's another one from Podrick. Not the quickest lad I've ever known, but a decent squire in the end. I hope you found a better man to serve. It made me think of Brienne, and Brienne. That was nice.
Are any of these your own?
Not yet. Here's okay. A good one.
Are we like doing a build up to
the
kind
of. Okay. I mean, it's such a good chapter. I feel like it deserves it. Snatch, which is like a guy that is with the Second Sons that Tyrion quite likes. It says, this is my quote. This is my note. This isn't from the book, but Snatch was scratching his balls with a hook hand because he has a hook hand. And and then Tyrion was like, this guy reminds me of Bronn.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's nice. Oh God, here's when he's lecturing Penny after she kisses him. War on either side of us and not a league away. That's a slaughter, Penny. That's men stumbling through the mud with their entrails hanging out. That's severed limbs and broken bones and pools of blood. You know how the worms come out after a hard rain? I hear they do the same after a big battle if enough blood soaks into the ground. That's the stranger coming, Penny. The black goat. The pale child, him of many faces. Call him what you will. That's death. Youch.
Okay, Tyrion. We get it.
Oh, here's a good one.
Here's the thing. You can't read the whole chapter.
One more. Out went Kim. When he returned, he held the tent flap open. This is when Brown Ben was like, tell the guy to come in here to talk to us. When he returned, he held the tent flap open for a youngish nobleman in a cloak of yellow silk and matching pantaloons. George, you could have said anything but pantaloons. I see you. Thanks for the wink. The man's oily black hair had been tortured, twisted, and lacquered to make it seem as if 100 tiny roses were sprouting from his head. On his breastplate was a scene of such delightful depravity that Tyrion sensed a kindred spirit.
And don't you love how the end of the chapter closes when he's like, I'll take that breastplate now.
Oh, damn, please. I didn't connect that. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I hope he wears it for the rest of the series.
If that breastplate fits, I want it.
Can you imagine? He's got this, like, completely just inappropriate. Let's just say that. I'm sure it's people fucking on it, right? Just like a whole bunch of them, like a massive orgy. If that's what's taking, if that's what's taking place, what if he gets known later in the series by that, like he's wearing that?
It would be really beautiful, honestly.
It would be. And
are you ready to give your own?
Yeah, I'll give my own. I just want to throw in really quick that I think that white dragon with the blood on it made me think about just Daenerys if she'd been turned with her dragon, not just the dragon, but Ice Dany as well.
Ooh.
That's a tale for another day. You should read your own because I've been talking for the last 4 minutes.
Just like reading chapters from, or reading passages from Winds of Winter.
I have more, man. It's good.
I know that you do. I'm going to give my own to Penny for a moment that you touched on, but she basically can't help herself and she kisses Tyrion. And I think it's weirdly sweet only because it's just a stressful situation. And so she just got to do what she got to do. And even though Tyrion kind of like mansplains everything to her at the end about war and battle, and it's like, okay, cool, we get it. At least he didn't. He kind of cycles through what he wants to say to her and he just doesn't say anything about the kiss, which I think is the best way to go. So my own goes to Penny.
Penny. You think she's going to survive?
No.
That's sad. And Tyrion was like, that moment where he thought of Groat had that searing narrative. It's like, geez, man. My own. Tyrion Lannister knew better. The gods did not fashion me to wield a sword, he thought, so why do they keep putting me in the midst of battles? No one heard, no one answered, no one cared.
Such a good line. That's one of my favorites, too.
It just encapsulated the stranger and the weird sort of complexity that our characters share with us, which is
and some of that rare. Teenage angst that Tyrion holds on to.
Definitely holding on to something.
Our own of the day today comes from our friend at Brendan B. Fish, who says, owned Viserion. He protect, he attack, he eats corpses midair to keep them from hitting Meereen.
Thanks, Jeff.
If you want to send in your own, whether it's for these Tyrion chapters, whether it's for your thoughts on the potential prequel series and all those different kind of things, you can find us on Twitter at Game of Bones. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Game of Bones, and you can also find us on Instagram at Game of Bones.
That's right. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can write to us contact@gameofbones.com.
If you follow us on those social media platforms, and you may have already seen that we are going to Ice and Fire Con this year.
April 23rd.
Which we're so excited about.
April 23rd.
You've been to Ice and Fire Con. I've never been to Ice and Fire Con. And it's going to be very exciting. April 23rd through 26th at Deer Creek Lodge
in Ohio. Ohio. And let me tell you, yes, I did go. I was so sad when you couldn't make it. But this year we've planned far in advance. So I'm excited. We've trapped you. We're going to be...
I had plane tickets last time.
I know.
That was the universe.
I know. It's April 23rd through 26th. The location is so amazing. It's cloistered away from the highway, away from people. And it really feels like you're in another place. And there's hundreds of Song of Ice and Fire fans that are surrounding you. And people are in costumes. And they're really nice and inviting. There's... the events each day of the convention. It's a really fun and inviting environment. And it was a really good time. I'm excited you're coming this year. I'm excited that we're going to do stuff there this year. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm super excited.
This year, next year, but this con year.
This school year. It's September. It's a new school year.
This school year. It's going to be during the school year this year. But we have a promo code that you can use. It's GOO. If you book a ticket for the con through their website, iceandfirecon.com. We'll also have that put up on our social media already. If you go to Twitter or Instagram, you'll probably see that. But yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be cool. Are you going to dress up as anything?
Cosplay isn't necessarily my thing, but could I get talked into it? Potentially.
Dude, that Lady Stoneheart, though. I think you could do it again. You could resurrect Lady Stoneheart again if it works.
Maybe I could. We'll think about it. So you can go to iceandfirecon.com and tickets are available through April 19th or until they sell out. So if you want to make sure, I would jump on it early. Don't wait for it. But we'll be talking about it a lot.
The countdown timer on the website says it's 31 weeks. away. So
April feels genuinely so far away.
It's weird though, when you look at it in your calendar, it's a lot sooner than you think.
It's going to be fun.
Which reminds me, we have a new podcast.
Yes, we do. We recorded episode 5 last night, which is exciting. So if you want to check that out, it's called It Really Makes You Think. And it really makes you think.
It really does.
If you go to itreallymakesyouthink.com, that'll direct you to our YouTube page where you can see full episodes. You can see clips of episodes if you just kind of want to get an idea of the random stuff that we talk about. You can find us on Instagram as well there. But yeah, we're having a good time.
Yeah, we're just making podcasts, you know, talking about stuff.
We're just out here.
Next on the podcast, you guessed it, mercy. Which is a fancy way to say Arya, but not Arya, no one, and Braavos. And let me tell you, this chapter is wild.
Is there such thing as a classic Winds of Winter release sample chapter? Because that's what this is.
This is the one. This is definitely the stranger is present all over this chapter. If we can believe in the deities that exist in this universe, strangers around, Braavos is already a hotspot for that kind of action. But we're not going to stop there. Because why not include Arya's sister in the mix? She's also under a make-believe name. Makes sense. Elaine Won, a.k.a. Sansa Won from the Winds of Winter. And I will say this for Hannah. Hallelujah.
Yay. Thank you.
You think we're going to have some Queen of the North foreshadowing? Are we going to start finding that in subtext built all over her chapters?
If not on purpose, then we will insert it ourselves.
Right on.
So Mercy and Elaine.
There's that to look forward to with Game of Thrones. In the meantime, we're making that other podcast called It Really Makes You Think. And you can listen because we talk about other stuff there. And we'll be making both of these shows. So just check back. And if you subscribe, then it'll pop up automatically. You don't need to keep refreshing it. Just do your thing.
And we'll be back pretty soon.
Check us out. Our albums are coming out real soon.